Welcome to this episode of Fossils and Fiction, a podcast that explores the stories of prehistoric life, most often through the stories we humans tell about it. It's produced by me, Travis Holland, with support from Charles Sturt University. Enjoy.
I am Sally Hurst, and I'm the founder of Founder Fossil, and I'm currently working out of Macquarie University.
Sally, I know that you grew up in a small town, and we share that in common. I know that because I recently saw that you went back there to speak to the children at your primary school. Tell me about that trip.
Yeah, so that was actually for Science Week of this year, and it was part of a program called Superstars of STEM. So it's a program run by Science and Technology Australia, and every 2 years they get 60 female scientists from across Australia, and they try and raise our public and media profiles and trying to smash gender assumptions about what a scientist actually looks like. I think especially in paleontology, a lot of people imagine either Ross from Friends or someone who is, you know, an elderly gentleman, maybe in a, you know, white lab coat kind of thing. So it's always very nice to go into a classroom and, you know, half the time I have pink hair and I'm quite young and I'm from a farming background. And so kids kind of go like, oh, wow, that's like me. I can go and do that too. So that was a big thing about why I wanted to go back to schools. And so try and, you know, be that role model that I kind of never had in that small country town. Now, to give a bit of context, the primary school that I went back to, so it's Gunning Public Schools, so it's in rural New South Wales. When I was there, it had a total of 65 children. I was one of 9 people in my year 6 class and one of only 2 girls in my year. So it didn't exactly seem like the land of opportunity. And it's still a very small school. They've doubled their size. They now have 120 kids. But it's still a lot of farmers' children. They still haven't had a lot of exposure to anything scientific. So it was really nice to go back there and kind of be like, I went to this school and now look at all these cool things that I'm doing and you can do them as well.
Yeah, that's it's really important, right? It's that old, it's almost become a cliche now, but you can't be what you can't see, right? So you have to be able to show people these pathways do exist. They are available. So tell me about your pathway then. What was your path like from that school through to studying archaeology and paleontology at uni?
So when I was in that school, we never really had people come and talk to us or do anything really. I think the closest thing we got was we had Museum in a Box, which was, I think, the Australian Museum at the time sent us a big box of artifacts or specimens about a particular topic. I have no idea what it was, but I always thought it was really cool. So from there, going into high school, I was much more into kind of history. I loved ancient history. I loved ancient Egypt. And science to me became just one of those subjects that I had to do because everyone had to do a science at some point. And when I was getting into the later years, going into year 11 and 12, I kind of wanted to do earth and environmental science. I enjoyed being outdoors and I thought, you know, I've never been able to do this before. This would be pretty cool. But there was me and one other girl who wanted to do it. So they didn't bother running the class. And so instead I got put into a generic senior science class where there was a total of 6 people. So it very much became more of a chore than kind of a class that I really enjoyed. And so I really didn't see science as kind of a place where I'd end up. When I was finishing year 12, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And that was really daunting. I work at the university where we often speak to high school students and they're so stressed about having to have all of these life decisions sorted out and your parents are like, you should do this and this and this. So it can be very daunting. And so I was definitely at that stage. And so I was kind of thinking that, oh, maybe I'll go and do writing or journalism or something in that space. I really liked English, but I wasn't really sold on the idea. So I was actually enrolled at a different university to do a journalism degree. I did an online journalism course and absolutely hated it. It was so not my thing. So I took a gap year and I dropped out of uni before it even started and went back to the drawing board And I had, you know, I'd enjoyed my ancient history class in high school, but I was actually working at the National Dinosaur Museum in Canberra. At the time, I'd done my year 10 work experience there, and kind of got to the stage where actually I really enjoy this. I love learning about these amazing creatures. So where can I actually do this seriously at a university? So packed up all my bags, moved to Sydney, and yeah, enrolled in a degree doing paleontology and archaeology. So best of both worlds.
It's quite separate to the sort of rest of the interview, but your notion of being prepared to have a go and try something else and figure out the pathway, but also not, you know, not insisting that once you've committed to a pathway or that kids should have this idea of a path set out in front of them, I think is also actually important. Like, you know, in my academic role, I've counseled a lot of students who are very unsure, and I've myself been in that position. So yeah, it can sometimes take some time to find where, you know, you're meant to be, sort of thing. So you went through your undergrad at Macquarie, is that right?
Macquarie, yep.
Yep. And then you got into this master's program, which is where I came across your work. So tell me about your master's project, because I think it's a really fascinating project that combines outreach and education with the science. Tell me about the project.
Yeah, so I had gotten to the end of my bachelor's degree and it felt like year 12 all over again. I was like, I have no idea what I want to do next. I just knew that I really love this archaeology. I really love paleontology. How can I try and put them together? And I was thinking about things that I wanted to try, and I hadn't really done much field work, so I knew that was on the list to try. I hadn't done a lot of Aboriginal archaeology, and so that was also kind of on the list. And it got me thinking about, you know, growing up on a farm, being out on country quite a lot, it wouldn't actually be that unusual for me to come across something, whether that's a fossil or an Aboriginal artifact. And I was thinking about, like, right, okay, sure, if I did find something, one, how cool. But also, what on earth am I supposed to do with it? I figured I could, you know, go and show my Professor Glenn and he could ID it for me, but am I allowed to take it off the property? What if I found it in a national park? What was I supposed to do? What if it's an Aboriginal artifact? Are there legalities? I'm sure there are, but I had no idea what they were. And it seems like this massive oversight that if I, having just done a degree in both of these things, didn't know what to do, then the people who are actually finding this stuff, just like farmers and bushwalkers and miners, probably also have no idea what to do. So that was kind of the inspiration that led to what I now call the Found a Fossil Project. And yeah, it was at that stage where I want to do research, but I don't know what I want to do after this master's. So I want to try and open as many doors as possible for myself. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I really wanted to include the communication aspects. I created the website that goes alongside it. Never done that before, so that was great. Did a really big Australia-wide survey. So there was bits of social science, archaeology, paleontology, statistics, everything that I could think of in there. So, you know, if I ever wanted to go and work for government or work as, you know, a field archaeologist, I could go and do all of those things instead of kind of narrowing myself into a topic more.
You probably can't see it, but you said that you didn't like the online journalism study. And as someone who trained as a journalist and now trains them, In my job, I think you're using a lot of those skills.
Absolutely. It's come around in a bit of a roundabout way, but I think that was the thing, that I just needed to find the right topic that I wanted to tell the stories of. And so it doesn't feel like work. It just feels like sharing cool things that have happened.
And so you created this, the website, the Found a Fossil Project website, and you also went and did a survey to get an understanding of what people know about the regulations and what they know to do. What did you find in the survey?
Yeah, so the survey was open for about 5 or 6 months, and it was open to anyone in Australia over the age of 10. So while I'm sure there were people in my networks who work in paleontology and archaeology, I also really wanted to reach out to those farmers, to the miners, the bushwalkers, to Aboriginal communities who a lot of the time are left out of these conversations about heritage, which I think is quite ridiculous because, again, they are the people who are finding this stuff. And so in the end, I had about 1,300 people complete the survey, which I was stoked by. If you've ever been a person walking down the street and, you know, someone's trying to get you to sign something, you know how difficult it is. So it was really good to get that amount of participation. And yeah, we were asking all sorts of questions about what would you do if you actually found a fossil versus an artifact? Who would you tell? Do you know the laws? All these kind of things. And so we found some really interesting things. I think the biggest one was that everyone was really enthusiastic to tell someone. We had about 70% of the survey population who was like, yes, I would report fossils and artifacts. But it became apparent very quickly that they didn't know who necessarily they should be reporting to. So for fossils, it was quite good. There are about 35% of people who said they would go to a museum, which is pretty good because museums tend to have at least one paleontologist who can hopefully identify their finds or go out to the person's property if they think it's something, you know, a big find or something new. But when it got to archaeological finds, Aboriginal finds, there were, so we kind of had a list of who would you contact if you found something, and it ranged from your local Indigenous community to parks and wildlife, your state heritage department, an archaeologist, you know, like a bunch of different things. Now, legally, it's actually your state heritage department. You are meant, like, legally, you have to report to them. And over 91% of people selected the wrong thing. So there were huge amounts of people who wanted to go to their local Indigenous community, which honestly makes sense. Who better could advise on the material of an area than the people who've been living there for tens of thousands of years? But then we had, you know, over 25% of people who just said, I don't know who to contact. And that was kind of the main reason why people wouldn't contact anyone at all, because they just didn't know. When it came to the legislation as well, there were a lot of assumptions that, yeah, I'm sure there are protections, but when it came to asking people, how adequate do you think these protections are? Only about 20 to 25% of people said, yes, it's adequate. It's protecting this material well. But that left about 40 to 55% of people who were like, I don't know enough about the legislation to agree or disagree with it. So it's obvious that people, yeah, they're enthused, but they just, the information is not very accessible. And so, you know, you've got to wonder how many finds have been out there that someone's just left behind or not documented, or just they have still in their backyard somewhere because they don't know who to contact.
Do you, did you use the website as an opportunity to set that information out for people so that hopefully if people start Googling, they'll find the website and they have a pathway to follow?
Exactly. So I was very aware of the fact that usually when you write a thesis, there's going to be like six people who read it. For me, three of those would have been my supervisors, two would have been the markers, and the other one was probably my mum. So I created the website as a way to actually connect with people, to get this information in front of the people who should be seeing it. So hopefully the catchy name, Found a Fossil, very easily comes up in a Google search. If you Google, I found a fossil, what do I do? My website will hopefully be the top thing that comes up. And so there is what legislation applies in your state, who you can contact for identifications, how you should handle this material upon initially finding it. And this was the first website that kind of existed to have all of this information. So it was quite nice to be the one to create it.
I kind of get the sense that people just send you random photos of fossils and artifacts now and say, what do I do with this? Is that how it works sometimes?
100%. I've done a lot of media about the project, and I'm very honest, like if people want to send me photos of their fossils or their artifacts, I don't necessarily have the skills to identify it, but I know a bunch of other paleontologists. So unfortunately for them, I now will, you know, Phil Bell at University of New England, I've worked with him a lot in Canada and now in Lightning Ridge. And every week I'll be like, hey, Phil, what's this fossil? Can you help me out here? But it's really positive. It's nice that people are so curious about the world around them. And I think the Found the Fossil Project has become a really non-judgmental, non-government platform where people feel safe to submit their finds and not get in trouble and just know a little bit more. And a lot of the time it is a rock, but they're really curious about the rocks and things that they have found.
Yeah, getting people to be more curious, to pay a bit more attention, to learn about the things that they find, even if they are, just rocks, I think is a really nice outcome. And as you say, lots of research projects just result in a piece of writing that not a lot of people read. So, having a website out there that people can access and use is a fantastic outcome as well. You really do seem to relish this engagement work. That's the sense I get from you. You give talks to schools, we've talked about, and over the internet. I think you were doing Skype a scientist. Why do you dedicate so much time to that work now?
I think for me, it's honestly my favorite part of the job. I think if you have a conversation with adults who aren't in paleontology, you'll get, oh, so what do you do? And you're like, oh, I'm a paleontologist. And they'll be like, oh, just like Ross from Friends. And then maybe there will be a follow-up question about dinosaurs or something, but it usually finishes pretty quick. But if you jump into a classroom full of 5-year-olds to 15-year-olds, they are so excited and they have endless questions about dinosaurs and the earth and everything. And so for me, it really just reminds me how lucky I am to be able to study this stuff and be able to share this information and stories with people who are just as excited about it. I think in paleontology, you can get caught up in like, oh yeah, dinosaurs, and they're definitely a good gateway. But just, I think I look at study dinosaurs and teach about them in the museum quite often in Sydney. And often it just becomes part of the syllabus, it becomes part of a script. And so when you have these spontaneous questions from kids, it really just kind of reminds you, like, wow, what an amazing animal this could have been or once was. And so it's really their enthusiasm that I think keeps me enthusiastic about it as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I saw as well that you had some opportunities to do the media training through ABC and SBS. Tell me about that process. What did you learn, back to journalism school?
So it was really good. So part of the SBS stuff was organized through this Superstars of STEM program that I'm part of. And so they took us in, they put us in front of a bunch of radio and sort of newsprint and TV journalists and gave us interview skills on, if you were asked a tricky question about fossils or whatever, how would you answer and how can you sum up your research in a really succinct but also engaging way? And so I think one of the biggest takeaways was that people don't want you to dumb down the science. They're interested, but you still need to communicate in a way that makes sense to them. And a way, hopefully, that's in kind of a storytelling format. That's generally what people relate to, and that is what's going to make them remember anything about your research and you yourself. So it was really, really good to practice as well. And it was nice as well throughout kind of the Found a Fossil project and kind of publishing of that in scientific journals to put those things into practice. And so, like, one of the biggest takeaways or one of the biggest things from the project for me was in the survey, there was this optional section where people could watch or read a video, a social media post, a blog, a brochure, or a web page about what to do if you do actually find something and who to contact. And when people, about 50% of people, did that part of the survey, and then we asked people who had originally said no, I wouldn't report a fossil or an artifact. We asked them if they changed their mind upon having engaged with that media. And about 100 people did change their minds. And so for me, that's like, wow, through this kind of storytelling elements that I've included into these media pieces, that's possibly 100 new dinosaurs or 100 new Aboriginal sites that are now going to be protected and reported in the future just because someone did a very low budget 8-minute survey. So it's pretty amazing to think, well, if my, project can have that impact, that rate of change, imagine what a museum funded or a government funded awareness campaign could do. So it's kind of realizing that these stories, that's going to be the key to making change.
And yeah, I think you've certainly lit the way forward. You appeared on The Science Show and a bunch of other media, as you mentioned as well. So yeah, you're certainly getting the story out there, which is absolutely fantastic. Now, I almost feel really bad asking this question because of where we started the interview and what you were talking about pathways and setting things forward, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So what's your plan going forward now? What's next for Sally Hurst?
No, I think this is a good question because I think it's good to be honest that not even adults have it all figured out. So now that I've finished my master's, I'm back at that stage where I don't know what I'm going to do next. 2023 and now going into 2024 has definitely been a gap year. So I haven't been studying. I don't work full time. I work casually at the Australian Museum as an education presenter. I work at Macquarie University in their like future students division. So when those panicked year 12 students go, what am I going to do with my life? They talk to me on the phone. But I'm still at that stage where I feel like there are so many things I haven't tried yet. And so I was learning to surf during COVID. So I got to go on a surfing trip to the Maldives. I was diving with tiger sharks. I was swimming with whales in Tonga. I got to go on a dinosaur dig in Canada with Phil earlier this year. And next year is kind of looking the same. So more dinosaur field work, more trying new things, hopefully more swimming with whales, and hopefully going to more and more regional and rural schools. As I said, that kind of talking to people is my favorite part of the job. So I'm really hoping I can get out to more of those places which have never had a scientist visit, and kind of, yeah, show that it doesn't matter what your pathway is, but there are some pretty cool things you can do out there in the world, and these kids can do them too.
Great. We will share your links to your thesis, the website, and of course your publication in the Journal of Science Communication, which also reports on that as well. Sally Hurst, thank you so much for having a chat on Fossils and Fiction.
Oh, good. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Fossils and Fiction. We're always looking for more paleo stories to tell and welcome your suggestions through our social channels. You can also send voice notes via Spotify or social media. Podcast theme music is Sonora by Quincas Morea via the YouTube Audio Library. Show notes are available on the website, fossilsfiction.co. Please subscribe and rate the podcast on your preferred podcasting platform.